Have you ever heard the expression, curiosity killed the cat? Well, it may just be a matter that the absence of curiosity is what can harm or even destroy a relationship. Stay tuned as we continue unpacking our mini-series on being relationally smart.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you'll also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Life's Key 3 episode. I am delighted that you are here, and I want to invite you from the very beginning to share this podcast with a friend. You could also share it with a stranger, and you might even share it with someone that you don't particularly care for. But it might be better received if you share it with a friend. And as you share about the podcast, also keep in mind that I also offer speaking engagements. I love being able to come and to share with audiences and just seeing people's faces light up and that aha moment when there is an insight or some information that can just break the logjam in someone's life or their relationship and can also just help somebody to move forward in their faith, in their emotional health, and in their relational wisdom. We are in a mini-series right now on being relationally smart, and we have talked about expectations and the importance of identifying, assessing, and communicating them. Notice I did not say the importance of getting rid of them, because that is not our goal in expectations. It's not to try to live as if we have none. First of all, that's nonsense. And secondly, we don't even have the capacity to do that, because that would be like saying, let's try to live as if gravity doesn't exist. Not going to work out too well. We have also talked about the interconnection between stereotypes, expectations, and having or not having a solutions mindset. Have you ever been around someone who seemed like that they just wanted to rehash a problem and not actually solve it? Yeah, me too. And if I'm honest, there have been times that that person is the one looking back at me in the mirror. But having a solutions mindset is a major difference between people who want to take responsibility for their lives and people who just want to feel victimized by their lives. Today, what we're going to talk about is the power of curiosity. Now, I have some young grandchildren, and let me tell you, they pack curiosity in spades. That is one trait they do not lack. They want to know why about all kinds of things. Why does a bug have this kind of wing? Why does that bird fly that way? Why do you have those spots on your arms, Nana? Why does this happen? Why does that happen? They just never cease being curious. And you know what? It's such a natural trait for them that it's almost as if there's not even an awareness of their own curiosity, because they just come by it so naturally. It hasn't yet been driven out of them, and oh, how I pray it never will be. But unfortunately, curiosity is one of those traits that sometimes we lose the appreciation for as we get older, and as we take on more adult responsibilities. Curiosity can seem, it can seem like kids' play. It can seem like one of those childish things that we need to leave behind, but it is anything but that. You see, when we don't operate with appropriate and healthy levels of curiosity, what we are going to default to are assumptions. Now, there are assumptions that like expectations, we do need to have it. So just like with expectations, our goal was not to say, okay, if I get to a certain point of maturity, I will no longer have any expectations. That's nonsense. And in the same way, our goal in life is not to say, well, if I get to be mature enough, then I'm not going to have any more assumptions. That's nonsense as well. You know, if I'm traveling down the highway and there's a driver in front of me who's just swerving back and forth between lanes, I need to make an assumption. I need to make an assumption for the well-being of myself, whoever is with me, and anybody else on the road at that time, that driver is operating with some type and level of impairment. Now, whether that is fatigue, whether that is substance abuse, whether that is, maybe they're having a health crisis at that moment and they're just trying to get their vehicle to a safe place. I need to make an assumption that there's some level of impairment and I need to adjust my driving accordingly. And let's say if I was ever in a store or a business and somebody walks in and pulls out a weapon and says, this is a holdup. Now, I don't know if anybody actually says that or if that just comes from the movies, but just go along with my example here. Well, I should assume that that would be a serious situation. I would not be smart to walk up to the person with the weapon and say, you know, I'm just curious. Could you just clarify something for me? Is this for real or is this just a practical joke that maybe is a little overboard? Okay, that is not what I should do. I need to make an assumption that it's for real and I need to behave accordingly. So there are extreme examples, and there are even times that in our relationships that there are some assumptions that we need to make. But most of the time in our relationships, assumptions impede or harm the relationship. And taken to an extreme can even destroy a relationship. As I speak about this, I want to make a critical distinction. There is a difference between trust and assumptions. Let me say that again. There is a difference between trust and assumptions. See, trust is when we have an understanding with someone else that there are expectations that are going to be met. I don't assume a spouse is going to be faithful. I trust they are. You see, trust is something that can be broken, and if it is broken, it has to be rebuilt. Assumptions don't get broken. They are either confirmed or proven incorrect, but it's different than trust. We need to operate with healthy levels of trust, and when we can get ourselves into danger when we start blending the two and we start treating matters of trust based on assumptions, and we start treating assumptions as if these are issues of trust. They're close to each other, but they are not the same thing. It's just like if you are standing close to a really dear friend and you are at church or you're in a sports arena or you're attending a concert together or you're standing in line to go to a Broadway show together or whatever, you can be standing really close together, but you are not the same person. And trust and assumptions stand really close to each other, but they are not the same thing. Assumptions are beliefs that we have about a person, but we've never really clarified. And this is where it is different than trust. And the more assumptions that we have in a relationship, well, the greater the likelihood that there's going to be conflict. For example, things like this happen all the time. There's a spouse who assumes the other is going to cook the meals or repair the car when it breaks. And how many people go into a marriage based on all kinds of assumptions about how life is actually going to operate day in and day out on all of these issues, from dry cleaning to car repair to financial management to who is going to plan the Christmas holidays and buy the gifts and wrap them, and how are vacations going to get handled, and what kind of house are we going to live in, and are we going to have 1,000 books, or are you, or somebody else, are you kidding me? Why would we ever need more than 10? I mean, we make all kinds of assumptions about things. But that becomes our problem, because then those assumptions tie into the expectations that we create. And that's why they're really good premarital counseling, and books and things that are written to help with that really get down to the level of, let's start looking at all these different assumptions that you have about how life is going to operate. And people who don't have those conversations and just make those assumptions often end up in a lot of conflict, because those things were not ironed out ahead of time. They weren't even identified ahead of time, much less really discussed and talked about, or they're just kind of glossed over. Oh, it'll all just kind of work out somehow. But it's not just in our marriage relationships where assumptions are important. Every single relationship has an aspect of assumptions. And again, the point is not that, oh, well, we're supposed to get to this point, we don't have any. Rather, it's a matter that we want to minimize the assumptions that we have, and we want to maximize the issues that we have that are issues of trust. For example, let's say there's an employee who makes an assumption that their boss, their manager, is just going to let them know if there are ever any concerns about the quality of their work. And then out of that conversation, there's going to be an opportunity provided for that person to improve. Well, if that hasn't been discussed, if that isn't somewhere written down, or that hasn't been talked about, then a manager can be making an assumption that the employee is just supposed to recognize when their work isn't up to par, and not be surprised when they get fired at a moment's notice, or they show up for an annual review and it doesn't go well. But the employee is like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? I thought that you were going to tell me if there was any issue. I mean, why didn't you bring this up like 6 months ago? You know, why are you waiting now for my annual review to tell me that you've had these concerns throughout all this time? There's a difference there between when things were accurately communicated, and maybe the manager said during the hiring process, yes, if there are ever any concerns, I will let you know immediately and give you an opportunity to address those concerns. If that was communicated and then doesn't happen, well, that's a matter of trust that has been broken. But if those types of things never get communicated, people just go in and they make assumptions, and eventually that is going to create conflict. We can also see this in just very practical examples. You know, a parent who assumes that whenever their child is going to have a significant test, the teacher is going to send out a reminder the day before. Well, if a teacher has made that clear at the beginning in their classroom policies, I will be sending out a reminder one day ahead every time we have a test, and then they don't do it, well, then that teacher is breaking trust. But if it's something that the parent just assumes, well, of course any good teacher would do that, but it has never been clarified, it's an assumption. And so the teacher didn't break faith with you. It's not that they were untrustworthy, it's that they just didn't live up to your expectation, because your expectation was based on an assumption rather than something that had been clearly communicated and agreed to. We end up with thousands of assumptions by the time we enter adulthood. So if our goal isn't to get rid of all of our assumptions, because we never will, nor should we try, then what is it? It is to cultivate curiosity and treat our assumptions as wet clay rather than fired porcelain. When I was growing up, my grandmother had a ceramic shop, and she taught so many women over the years how to make ceramics. And she had a kiln, and she had a shop, and people would come out, and they would pour their ceramics, and she would fire them in the kiln. Or somebody could come out, and they could pick out one of the ceramics that had already been dried in the kiln, and then they could paint that ceramic. And after they put on the different layers of paint and the sealants and all those different things, then it would be fired again, sometimes through several firings, so that it was all finished and they could come back and pick up their ceramic. Well, as grandkids who live nearby, we had the privilege of going over, not like every single day, but we could go over, and on a pretty regular basis, we were privileged to be able to pick out a ceramic that we could then work on. Now, if you've never worked on ceramics before, I don't know that that's a hobby that and a craft that has made a comeback yet, like some of our other crafts have, like say knitting or macrame or whatever. Maybe, I don't know, maybe ceramics will end up making a big comeback. But what happens is you have this, say, kind of white, off-white piece of pottery. And because it has been put into a mold, this clay has been put into a mold, and then it has been baked in a kiln and set. When that mold is in two parts and it is put together, there is like a raised edge around that ceramic where that mold fits together. So you think of it in terms of like these two pieces that you pour the clay into, and then you put another piece on top and you bake all of that. And as that opens up where those molds fit together, you have this raised edge, kind of like a seam. Well, what you have to do with that is you take a special tool and you scrape that seam, that raised edge off. So you smooth that part out, because you don't want that sticking up and announcing, okay, this was where the mold came together. But you have to be very careful with that, because if you're not careful, you'll end up gouging the ceramic and chipping it off. So you have to just scrape very gently so that seam, that raised edge, comes off. Well, we have assumptions in life that need to be scraped off. And we don't just go in with a chainsaw and start whacking away at our assumptions and trying to throw them all out. They take care in how we examine them and how we decide which ones that we are going to scrape off. So how do we do this in real life? Well, the first thing that we can do is just get curious about the assumptions you have about yourself. All of us have assumptions about ourselves, some positive, some negative, some true, and some false. What do you believe is true about yourself that somebody else might disagree with? And this isn't just about positive things that you believe about yourself, that if you ask the people around you, that they would all say, I don't know where you got that idea, but let's set that straight. Yes, that can be part of our lives and should be part of our lives as well. But it also sometimes is a matter that we believe very negative things about ourselves, and the other people around us are going, I don't know where you get that. I don't know where you come up with that. That's not how other people see and experience you at all. You have a false assumption about yourself that isn't based on truth. So what do you take for granted about yourself that might not be accurate? Because how you see yourself, the assumptions that you have about yourself, is going to have a profound impact on how you show up in your relationships. If you assume that you are not very social and you're awkward and it's hard for you to have a conversation with someone, you will take that assumption into the engagements and encounters that you have. So you have this opportunity, you walk into a new job or a new meeting or any kind of say new opportunity. And if you are already packing that assumption about yourself that you're socially inept, it's going to absolutely influence how you are able to walk into that situation. So get curious about the assumptions that you make about yourself and be willing, whether they are positive ones that you need to hold on to, whether they are negative ones that you need to get rid of, or sometimes there might be some things that you believe about yourself that, yeah, positive things that maybe aren't really quite as positive as what you want to think. Have the humility to be willing to look at your assumptions that you have about yourself. And secondly, and of course, this is going to not be a big shot, get curious about the assumptions that you make about others. Instead of thinking, oh yeah, I know, ask, investigate. Now, the goal here is not to interrogate. Okay, there's a very big difference between getting curious and investigating to try to find out about somebody else's story and their motivation and their thoughts and interrogating somebody. You know, the goal here is to learn, not to put somebody on trial and to prove your assumption is correct. Actually, just the opposite. It is to get curious enough to find out that maybe your assumption is incorrect. It is easy in conversation like this to think that, well, okay, this all sounds good, but does it really matter? Yes, absolutely, it matters. Significantly, this is huge. You see, every time that we have an encounter with another person, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's short, whether it's something that happens over a long period of time, there will be some level of assumptions at work in that relationship unless we get really curious about what's really going on with me and what's really going on with this individual. Have you ever had an experience where you were in a conversation and someone said something and you just knew what they said and you ran off with it, and then later when you decided to get curious about it, or it was kind of forced on you to have to reevaluate what was going on, you learned that what you heard wasn't at all what that person said? Yeah. Okay. Raising my hand here with that one. This is where when we learn to first get curious early on, especially when there's a conflict, if you train yourself so that your default reaction when there's conflict is curiosity and not defensiveness, you will be so far ahead. If you get curious and it turns out that there really is some injustice being done or something that needs to be set right, okay, you still have the opportunity to do that. But how many arguments might be avoided entirely? How much conflict might be settled really quickly if our default reactions when we were irritated or upset or angered by something, rather than getting defensive and rather than thinking we know what's being said and we know what they mean, we got curious instead. And instead of interrogating that person, we investigated. We got curious and began trying to, and asking questions to draw them out. Is what you're saying XYZ? I think what I hear you saying is XYZ. Is this true? Have I heard correctly? So what you're saying is, Can you tell me why that is important to you? That seems like something that's like a 9 out of a 10 for you. Can you help me understand the value of that? Can you help me understand why this doesn't seem to be important to you? And again, it's about investigating. It's not interrogating. You know, we can ask the very same question in terms of the words that we use, and yet we can ask two entirely different questions, right? Because we could say, well, tell me why that's important to you. Or we could say, well, tell me why that's important to you. I've used the same words. I have most definitely not asked the same question there. So get curious, make it a point that you will cultivate the practice of curiosity, because it's not just for kids. It's not just for children. It's not child's play. Curiosity is as needed in adulthood as it is in childhood, maybe even more so. So identify, investigate, challenge, and then change your assumptions through the power of curiosity, and watch and see how you become much more relationally intelligent and how much more your relationships can and will improve. All right, my friend, that is going to wrap us up for today. If you haven't already, make sure to visit stephaniepresents.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter, High Impact. Why? Because I want to help you maximize your immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable impact. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.